Hi, I'm Marianne McPartland. Today on Piano Jazz is Bruce Hornsby. He's respected for both his playing and his songwriting. He's recognized by musicians, critics, and fans alike, not only for his deft melding of many musical styles, but for his unique sound as well. In short, Bruce is the consummate musician, and that is definitely
true. That's a whole lot of hype, isn't it?
No, no. That's
true. A bit
true.
Of bluster, but thank you very much for that.
It's great to have you here, Bruce, after thinking about it for years.
It took a long time, yes. You asked me to do this probably 12 years ago.
At least.
Maybe longer. And I kept putting you off.
Yeah, you
but
did.
But I had a good reason for it,
what
really.
Was it?
Well, the reason was I always, in those years, okay, we came out with our first record in 1986. And really from 86 to about 95, in all those years, I would find myself certain times in solo piano situations. It could be a radio show. Sometimes, you know, they wouldn't want to pay for the band, so they'd just have me play piano. And I would find myself in these solo piano contexts playing my songs, and I would feel so inadequate because I hadn't really developed my left hand, sort of independence of the hands, and really a strong rhythmic feeling where I could sort of project a strong pulse. I could project. It's funny because I went to jazz school. I went to music school, University of Miami, and I went through all that training. Not that it's really under my fingers now, but I always loved all the, you know, Bud Powell, Bill Evans, Chick Corea, you know, the Herbie Hancock. The list goes on and on.
But you could have done the show.
Well, I could, but I would have done it in playing that. I would have wanted to be able to play some of my music and have it really work. I just wasn't satisfied with the way I played my own music in a solo piano context. So about 1995, I sort of rededicated myself to the study of the piano and worked out some things that I'd always wanted to work out. So now
here you are.
Now, yes, you finally got me.
I got you, and I'm very glad.
I'm glad to be here.
God, and now I get to hear you play a solo, one of your own choosing, whatever.
Yeah, this first thing I'm going to do is a song from a record of mine 2 records ago. The record's called Spirit Trail. It features a cover with my Uncle Charles with a cigarette coming out of his ear and him lighting the cigarette with a lighter. It's my record company hated the cover, but it's my favorite one. That's how you would know it in the store. Uncle Charles with wide eyes staring out at you. Anyway, this song is the first song on the record, and I'm playing it because it illustrates a little bit of what I've been trying to work on in sort of finding a way to play my music in a unique way. And here it is.
You're going to sing too, aren't you?
Well, I might sing if I'm so moved. Or maybe I'll just talk it. We'll see. This is King of the Hill. I'm on piano jazz. I'll go into a tune that I go into sometimes in this out of this song, Bill Evans' tune. Thank you.
standing on a rail, I'm letting my eyes roam over the plain. Well, I'm laughing on my break, feeling like a captive on a long chain. Watch the people pick up sticks, big boss man cracks his whip. Serious, but we laugh to keep from crying, crying, oh, crying. Spouting off the company line, everything here's just fine. Says he cares about me, but I know he's lying, oh, lying. Oh, and up in the big house, king of the hill. I'm watching the boss man, talking to his sister with the dirty hands. They sit cussing at the rules and wishing they could lose me as fast as they can. He got me in the roughest rig, thinks I took his brother's gig. People say they got the game rigged. Oh, Daddy gave him everything, a job and a house and his earring. Why'd you think that I'm so threatening? Oh, so bad. And up in the big house with the king of the hill. And there, driving the big cat with the king of the hill. Got his hand in his pants at the skin flick. Leisure suit, thinks he's slick. Lots of poisons, take your pick. Mama, 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 come quicker than getting alive. Feeling like I'm getting sick. Have you noticed any nervous ticks? Think I better take care of myself. Oh, myself. And then up in the big house, the king of the hill.
I had to laugh the way you went into 12-tone tune. Bill Evans tunes
that nobody plays.
Nobody plays. I do play it, but
you do.
But I haven't lately. But boy, that's pretty wild. Pretty wild.
Well, a
lot of fun.
Yeah, it's really enjoyable to get the two hands going, sort of to play rhythmically in one hand, one way, and sort of be very free to play very sort of rhythmically free in the right hand and keep the left hand going.
Still keep it going. Because
keep it real solid, yeah.
If you don't know where you're at, you can get all hung up, but not you. You wouldn't. You know, when you got started playing piano or singing or both, were you just a kid? Who did you listen to?
Well, when I was a kid, I was just like I was your typical kid listening to Top 40 radio. For instance, we had the discerning taste of 11, 12-year-olds. One night we'd go hear Jimi Hendrix play live, and then the next night we'd go hear the Cowsills or, you know, the Partridge Family and then Zeppelin, you know. We just liked everything we heard on the radio. But then I was like your standard rock teenager reading Rolling Stone magazine, and there was a full-page review of two records by a person I'd never heard of named Keith Jarrett.
Oh.
And one of them was the solo piano record Facing You.
Oh, yes.
And so I read this, and I was really intrigued by it because I was really interested in the piano, but I didn't know from jazz at all. I was totally into whatever you heard on the radio and popular music, rock music at the time. Couldn't find these records. ECM was a German import at the time. They didn't have an American distribution deal, so you could not find ECM records in Tidewater, Virginia, anywhere in Virginia.
I would imagine not.
You could not. This is 1972. I went to Boston, visiting colleges, went to the local store, record store there, or one of the stores, and found Facing You. Took it home and sort of changed my life. I was also getting into Bill Evans at the time. Montreux 2 was the first Bill Evans record that I bought, because it's the only one they had in our store.
Anything by Bill Evans is okay.
It's fantastic. Yeah. So then it sort of totally, it turned my attentions headlong into jazz.
Well, before we do talk more, because I know you've got tons of great things to talk about, please play another tune.
Okay.
And this, I love the title of this, Sneaking Up on Boo Radley.
Yeah, that's right.
I love this title.
It comes from, I've always written my songs about my experiences growing up in a small town.
You write everything, like the words, the music.
Yes, I write it all.
Whole conception.
Yeah, I've always been interested
in lyric
writing.
Do you sit it under a dim light in your bedroom or something, writing
this
stuff?
No, I just... It's never far from my mind. I'm always sort of ready to receive. I don't sit down and just do it. I've never been good at just saying, okay, I'm going to sit down and write a song today. Mostly I need to have a lyrical idea that's interesting to me. I'm not much of a baby, I love you kind of writer. I mostly write stories or little vignettes about things that I'm interested in. And this particular song comes from... my situation, growing up in a small southern town that had a mental hospital in the town. And so a lot of the patients would just be walking around the town, and some of them looking a little bizarre to us kids.
Yeah.
Well, as kids, we thought it was hilarious to imitate them and make fun of them. Later on, we realized this was a little dodgy, you know, a little
not so happening.
But, you know, when you're 10 years old, you don't know from this. You just do it. And... So this is a story about sort of juxtaposing that experience with the kids sneaking around the house of Boo Radley, played by Robert Duvall, I think in his first film role in the movie To Kill a Mockingbird. It comes from that musically. It's really dealing with trying to find a place for a left-hand ostinato in pop music.
Well, this is one I've just got to hear.
Okay.
Up in the dark, pull the handle a little more, open up real slow, so the door won't creak. Look ahead, look behind, don't shuffle your feet. Well, they say he's crazy, they say he's gone. We play our tricks, make up funny songs, sneaking around, feeling badly, sneaking up on Boo Radley. Hear the caterpillar crawl, feel the bedbugs bite, all the crickets scream, all the sounds of the night. Hear the sound of footprints on the ground across the grass. Don't step on the lightning bugs, watch the crack in your knees. Well, they say he's crazy, they say he's gone. We play our tricks, make up funny songs, sneaking around, feeling badly, sneaking up on Boo Radley. Time ago, saw some things we'll never know. We laugh and sneak around in the night, fun and games, but I know it's not right. Oh, not right.
You know, the rhythm on that tune is fantastic. I was thinking to myself, you do so great just what you play that somehow you don't miss all the drums and all the things that you usually have. It's a different feeling, but it's just as good in another way.
Well, I always thought it was very difficult in jazz to... It seemed much more difficult to play... when they were playing stride, the old Tatum, when they really had to keep the rhythm, the solo piano concept, which kind of went out the window with the bebop years.
Yeah, it
you
did.
Know, when Bud and those guys came in, they
I know
really...
they just play like...
Yeah. They play that stuff, you know.
Yeah, right. But,
you know... They played all that sort of thing.
All and the right hand was
the right
doing
hand
all
was
the
where
work.
The rhythm was, but to me... Well, I play in large places lots of times, and that doesn't really project to the back row. So I felt the need to really figure out a way to find my own way of projecting a strong pulse in the left hand. It's all about, you said, the rhythm of it is strong. Well, that's the whole idea. I wanted to find a way, whether it was the ostinatos like this, or the, you know, they're just the... So
yeah,
it was unmistakable
things.
Where the time was. That's a
very good point. Bill Evans and I were talking about that. He hated to play solo piano.
Right, he felt inadequate.
Because he couldn't...
he hadn't developed that stride thing, right?
He just didn't seem to like what he was doing in his left hand. He would only play more like ballads as solo.
Well, it's perfect. Left-hand comping is perfect for a band situation because you're out of the way of the bass player. What I'm playing in this context is dead wrong lots of times in a band context.
In
because,
a band, it would be in the way.
The bass player is going, wait a minute, why am I here? You're
That's
doing
right.
it.
Well, there's more to come with Bruce Hornsby. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. It's time you and I did a duet. You know, we've got so much good stuff to talk about. Let's play some good
stuff. Absolutely, let's do that.
So what should we do? What would be good? A Bud Powell tune?
Well, I love Bud, and I've been sort of getting more into Bud the last couple of years, so let's play Parisian Thoroughfare.
That's a good one. Now, not too fast.
Okay. Here we go. Thank you.
I knew you wanted the last word.
No, you had the last word. No, you didn't play it again. Sorry.
No, that was good. I love that tune. That's, to me, that's one of the really good or extra good Bud Powell tunes.
It's so pianistic.
It is. You know, and I used to go and hear him when he was at Birdland. We would be at the Hickory House, and it was just a quick 2 minutes across the street, and they would let us in for free. We'd go down there.
Well, I'm so envious. Anyone who was there in that fantastic era, you know, that's the great days of bebop. So.
I know. I really feel so lucky to have been there and to have known Bud and had pictures taken with him, and he would come in the Hickory House. And I mean, he was a little bit off the wall, but I mean, he... What was that thing of his, Poco Loco?
Yeah.
Do you do that one?
What is it?
Something
like that. That's a fantastic. I love Bud, as you can see. I know a lot of his tunes. The book Dance of the Infidels.
I've got that.
It's very moving. It's really a sad book. It really really affected me.
Well, you know that guy that wrote the book.
Did you know him, Francis?
I did know him.
Audra, however you say his
name. It's so awful. He committed suicide. He seemed to suddenly run out of money and friends, and all the people he thought were going to help him didn't, and it was like he was at the end of his rope, and it was a shame. The guy was brilliant. And I mean, to write a book like that and to help Bud the way he did, that's a fantastic book. Everybody should have that.
I think so too, yeah.
Translated into English. I've got the French.
Me too.
Version.
Yeah, I've got the French and the English.
Yeah, so anyway.
I took 6 years of French, and I can read about every third word. But
well, good for
unfortunately.
You.
Unfortunately,
not I. But then I've got just having that book means an awful lot to me.
Yeah, me too.
But anyway, you're getting me inspired. I could play a tune for you.
Oh, fantastic!
But now, where shall I go? What kind of a tune should I play? Should I make something up or do a standard tune? What would you like to hear?
I would like to hear you do whatever you want to do.
Okay. I'm thinking. Thank you. So there.
Fantastic. What is that tune?
Close your eyes. And I really didn't mean to know that I was going to go there. Suddenly I heard myself doing it.
Yeah, right.
I thought, well, I can play that.
That's great.
So,
fantastic.
But you made me do that, you know. Well, more in a minute. My guest is Bruce Hornsby. Our program is made possible in part by the Baldwin Piano Company, manufacturers of the pianos heard on Piano Jazz. I'm Marion McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR.
Marion, I would love to play this tune, this old Miles tune called Solar. Because it brings me to another sort of area that I've been dealing with the last few years, sort of on a conceptual level. Loving jazz music like I do, I've always tried to sort of turn my friends on to this music. So Bill Evans is a perfect example. As much as I love Bill Evans, like you do, most of my layman friends think of Bill Evans as cocktail music. It sounds like cocktail music to them. And you know what? I know what they mean. I understand that. And so I've been trying to find a way to play the standard repertoire in a way that doesn't have that sound, that has more of, well, actually trying to make it sound more like what I would do with it. So I actually have a, how about if we do it this way? I'll play the intro, and then you set the time and play the tune, and I'll come in with you, okay?
Okay.
I'll play a little rubato intro.
Okay.
And then C minor. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay.
What did you think that was? A little like a minimalist, I can't say.
Yeah, sort of a two-part invention in a way.
Yeah, it was. You were showing your classical roots there for a second or two. Oh, that's a lot of fun. Great fun.
The great thing about those tunes, you know, you can just do that. There's such vehicles for so many, for doing so much to them. You know, you just take them anywhere. It's tough, and not too many modern songs really have that. We try to have that same feeling, though, on our live shows. You got to come see us play sometimes.
I'd love to.
Because it's great fun. It's very spontaneous. We never know where we're going. We'll try to do songs we've never played. We've been known to butcher them now from time to time, but at least we try. At least we're trying to do something completely new. You know.
Spontaneity is a great thing, and when I think of how Duke Ellington's band, I mean, the guys in the band, they sort of knew the notes that would be good for them to play without him writing anything down. He kind of...
Oh, that's amazing. I didn't know that. So yeah, they could actually improvise as a big band together? That sounds like very difficult.
Well,
if it's playing free, that's different, but in a tonal situation,
there were notes like the trombone would sort of know where his note should be or was in the tune. I mean, watching Duke rehearse was kind of interesting, especially at a concert like at Carnegie Hall. We'd all be filing in our seats, and Duke would still have his sweater on rehearsing the band. And
isn't that something?
Yeah, I just can see it now. But anyway, a lot of what he did, he just did a skeleton-type thing, and the guys would kind of know where their notes were supposed to be.
And that's amazing.
Anyway, more piano would be nice, like if you'd play... We were talking about pretty ballads.
I mean,
you could play.
Well, I guess this goes ballad. Sort of into the back into the sort of the controversial statement of the cocktail piano is what people think Bill Evans sounds like.
It's funny. What can you call it today? There really isn't cocktail time. It's sort of something different, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know, but I still hear people play cocktail piano in restaurants, and generally they're playing, you know, the old standards, you know. You know, they're playing that sort of thing. And
yes.
So that's why I think people think it sounds like cocktail music. Because it is, you know.
Well.
I don't think a lot of people can tell the difference between sort of the half-baked way I'm playing that, which sounds like cocktail, and the real deep way that Bill Evans would play, you know,
yes,
with all the incredible voicings.
Yeah.
But like the song We'll Be Together Again.
Oh, that's a great song.
Great song. I know it from the Bill Evans Tony Bennett record. So, you know, Bill Evans would play it, his voicing would be sort of a little bit like, you know, that sort of thing. So I just started to try to really simplify it and make it very sort of modal and stark.
Are you starting?
I'm starting right now.
Get into my listening mode.
Thank you.
That's such a beautiful tune. What you did with it was, it's done with thought, and it's probably hard not to play that tune with some kind of feeling because of the way the tune is put together. Like this part here, it goes. I just love that part in there.
Yeah. It's great melody.
I'm glad you chose that one. You know, so many things I wanted to ask you, and I kept getting into other things. But years ago, you had your group, The Range. That was one of the first things you did, right?
Right, that was the first band I had. Mm-hmm. Well, the first band anyone knew about. We had The Uncommon Cold and Schenectady and The Soul Basketball in high school.
But
they were joke bands.
But they were great. But then... later on, you went with the Grateful Dead, of all things.
Yeah, it was this relationship that started really early on our tour, on our first record. We got a call out of the blue from the Grateful Dead asking us to open some shows for them. So our first record came out spring of 86. Spring of 87, we're still touring on the record because it had gone so far so quickly around the world and in the United States. Sometime in May of 87, we opened up for the Dead two days at Laguna Seca Racetrack in Monterey, California, or near Monterey. And then the next year, 88, they asked us to open a couple of more shows. We played Buckeye Lake in Ohio, played a benefit at Madison Square Garden, a rainforest benefit. And the next year, 89, they asked that we play two more shows with them, opened for them again, or three shows, I believe, RFK Stadium, JFK Stadium, Philadelphia. And then they would ask me to sit in with them. It was this growing relationship gradually developing. Then I asked Garcia to play on my next record. Then I would come and sit in with them when we weren't opening for them. And then it culminated really sadly in the death of Brent Midland, their keyboard player at the time, and them asked me to help them through this tough time. If they'd have gotten to me in 1984, I'd have probably just been their piano player because I always liked their music. I liked their approach to the music because it was very improvisatory. I loved their songs too. A lot of people don't realize Grateful Dead, 50 or 60 great songs that make the hair stand up on my arms. Wow. Anyway, I did that. So I played with them pretty much full time for 20 months, about 100 shows, and then after that, I would come and sit in with them when they were geographically close to me. And Garcia kept playing on my records, too. I'm sorry, what did you say?
No, I was going to say it must have really been a kick for you doing that. You must have had a ball doing it, didn't you?
Well, my standard line is, where else can you play one song for an hour?
With Sonny Rollins.
Well, you know, Sonny Rollins never sat in with us, but Ornette sat in.
Oh, really?
Yes, David Murray sat in with the Dead. I never was on stage. I was never playing with them when he did this, but... they're great people, and I wouldn't trade my time with them for the world. It was just an amazing experience, and I was really influenced by them on an approach to live gigs level to open it up and loosen my thing up a little bit. I was already doing it a little bit, but playing with them really sort of opened me up. But also, I was really more influenced by them as songwriters because I just loved certain things that they came up with.
Like what, for instance?
Well, to me, they have 10 or 15 songs that sound like old folk songs that could have been written 100 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, and I love that feeling. And they have some songs that are in odd times, vocal songs in odd times.
Yeah.
I always loved that. There's just certain things that they would do, certain musical buttons that they would press that would just get me going. Like I said, make the hair stand up on my arms. It was so amazing.
The same thing was happening with the audience, no doubt.
Yeah, there's nothing like the audience.
I mean, the audience
amazing.
Followed them every place.
Yeah, absolutely. When you'd play Madison Square Garden, I played there with him about, I don't know, 16 times. And when the crowd would get rolling, the stage would move.
Would jump
would
a
shake.
Little.
Yeah, it was
really?
Very wild sensation.
Wow, I can well imagine. Goodness. Well, there's more coming up. My guest is Bruce Hornsby. Our program is made possible in part by the Friends of Piano Jazz. I'm Marion McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. God, it's so interesting talking to you and hearing you play, and it's worth the wait, Bruce. The 12-year.
Well, there were things, lots of things that I can do now that I couldn't have done then. I just, like I said, just spent the time.
So your timing is good.
Yeah, well, hopefully. I'm glad to be here.
Timing is good. But during, I don't know exactly when, but you did have some considerable hits. And one of them was called The Way It Is. I'm sure people would love to hear that, as would I.
Okay. Yeah, I will do it. I'll do the abbreviated version because this song can
Why, does this go for an hour?
It can, not quite. It can go for 10, 12 minutes, though.
Well,
but not this time.
We might have to get the hook out if you did that.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm okay with the hook.
Standing in line, marking time, waiting for the welfare dimes. They can't buy a job. Old man in a silk suit hurries by as he catches the poor old lady's eyes. Just for fun, he says, get a job. It's just the way it is. Some things are never changed. Chains, that's just the way it is. Oh, but don't you believe them? Don't believe. Said, hey, little boy, you can't go where the others go. You don't look like they do. I said, hey, old man, how can you stand and think that way? Did you really think about it before you made the moves? He said, son, that's just the way it is. Some things will never change, never change. That's just the way it is. Oh, but don't you believe it?
Wonderful.
Just like the record.
But
not
I'm
at all.
Amazed at how you don't seem to miss, or I don't seem to miss all the drums and the percussion and everything. It just is very full on the piano. It's
Well, like I said before, it's that's the idea of my approach. I wanted to get so I could really do this solo and feel like I was really delivering the whole thing.
You know, and the
left hand is the band.
Yeah, and you're doing it. It's very impressive.
That last bit is sort of from an old gospel piano thing. Like, you remember the great piano player Richard T? He was such a great player. He played in a band in New York called Stuff. He played with Paul Simon for years, and he was really into this. Yeah, that's sort of...
That's wonderful.
Just love that sound. I've just been into so many different types of music, and I've always just tried to put it all together.
But it really comes out as very... very jolly, fun, happy music. You know, it's a nice feeling. Makes you want to get up and cheer. Really.
Well, thanks.
It's knocking me out. Well, everything we're doing is fun to do. I'm having a very good time listening to you expound and play. And what have we got coming up?
I'm looking to play a little... like old style Monk meets Albert Ammons.
Yes.
Meet Lux Lewis.
That's
right.
Great.
What we're going to try that.
Great.
You want to try that now?
Before we do, I've got to tell you that it was worth waiting 12 years to get you on piano.
Well, thanks.
It really was.
Likewise.
I'm enjoying it very much. So we can wind up with Blue Monk and. Or Blue Monk Boogie or something
like
that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Okay, I'll just get the groove going. You can play
it. Yeah, you can. Thank you. go there.
You ever played it that way? You ever played it like that? It's fun.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland and her guest, Bruce Hornsby. This program was originally broadcast in 2004. Join us each week at this time for an hour of conversation and improvisation with Marion McPartland and her guests. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant recording engineer Chinook Kang, mastering engineer David Mitchell, production coordinator David Lyon. The executive producer is Elaine Freeman. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. To learn more about the artists and music selections on the program, visit us on the web at pianojazz.npr.org. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the National Endowment for the Arts, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR. Support for this program's original production was provided in part by Borders Books and Music and the Baldwin Piano Company. Support for NPR comes from NPR contributors, which include the Lemelson Foundation, supporting inventors and invention to improve lives in the U.S. and developing countries, on the web at lemelson.org, and the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping people build measurably better lives, on the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.